Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A crime he didn't commit. A police force out for blood. A judge bent on one man's destruction. In his time of need, a team came together to right the wrongs, to change the paths. If justice is blind, then they would take her hand and guide her through the darkness. And to do so, they created...
A podcast? Are you being serious? They're not sleuths, they're flipping radio DJs trying to make money from a new platform. Editing case notes together with a Neve preamp doesn't make you Dick Tracy. But fortunately you, dear listener, have made the right choice. It's not true crime, you're listening to Guitar Nerds, a podcast all about guitars. And hey, if you're still trying to find more podcast content that isn't about some semi-fabricated murder in the southern states, then head on over to patreon.com/guitar nerds. Oh, we'll see you there.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Hello there.
And Jay Cross.
Hello.
And of course, Mark Packham, of course, you're amping up your slightly damaged vocal cords.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
Packham.
You're going to spend this whole podcast whining about your damage.
I'm going to spend most of this podcast being completely silent because I feel that if I talk at my normal velocity and with normal wit and knowledge that I usually spill over these undeserving listeners, then I'll lose my voice completely.
I'm struggling. Okay. Well, in that case, let's start with Mark Packham.
Hello there.
There's a really good music-related reason that you've lost your voice.
Yeah, I did a bit of recording yesterday. So went into the studio on Friday to record a 10-track album in 3 days.
Unbelievable.
Which
comparatively, you know, the last thing I recorded was a 7-track album in 10 days.
Sure. I mean, there was a band in the other studio at the complex who were there for 4 weeks.
Yeah, that's a good amount. That's the correct amount of time.
I just get really bored.
To spend honing your craft.
We stayed at this. I mean, the studio is absolutely phenomenal. But the last thing that I'd want to do for 4 weeks is stay in a room with my bandmates eating, like, either going to restaurants to eat or eating, like, microwave meals. I can't imagine doing that. It was 3 days of that was more than enough.
I love that you're involved in music because it just everything about it seems to be, like, the thing that you hate most in life. This just even going to the studio and creating an album.
I know, I love the recording part, that's fine, but I wouldn't want to do it for a month. I like, you know, doing other stuff like seeing my mates and playing computer games and that.
My least favourite part, recording.
Really?
My absolute least favourite part.
You're the opposite. Mark, you prefer recording to live, and Jay, I assume, the flamboyant front man that you are.
Yeah, side piece. I'm the side piece now. Danny G's the front man. I'm the side piece.
Right.
The problem with recording is there's sort of nowhere to hide, and you can't really be like, "Whee, I was a bit pissed, sorry." It's just, you know, people listen to what you played.
I do exactly the same thing. Yeah. Like every time, a couple of weeks before I go into the studio, I'm like, "Oh,
crikey, I better actually learn some of these bits and stop just sort of thrashing around.
Yeah. I did the classic not writing the second verse to any of the songs until the morning of vocal recording.
Wait, so any of that, you recorded 10 songs?
Yes.
And you only had one verse for 10?
Yes. Yeah, always. And most of them, not even the first verse was finished.
Oh.
Just no one cares about that. People only care about the chorus.
But
so
you spent ages writing this.
Yeah, but I just like go blah, 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 blah. No one could tell the difference anyway, so it's fine.
Sure.
I mean, we've done a gig with some of these songs that haven't had a second verse, so
amazing.
It's fine.
Okay, so talk me through the gear you used, the recording process. It sounds like you actually used some pretty.
We never actually got to the point of why my voice is so bad. Obviously,
oh yeah, sorry.
You know, we recorded a ton of stuff, but yesterday I spent 5 hours doing vocals across the 10 songs, which was pretty.
You did it all in one?
Yeah, all in one go, and most of the songs just did in like a couple of takes straight through as well.
Really?
By the end of it, we're having to, you know,
outrageous.
do bits line by line because I was struggling with my voice.
What, you just do a double take line by line? Because that's how singers would normally do it.
Yeah, no. What we did the first time around was just sing the whole song all the way through, come back round.
That's not an album, that's a demo.
Do that a couple times and then pick the best one out of those. Okay. But yeah, after that, we had to do a bit of line by line. So I think it's not how people record music these days, but the end result is sounding real good.
It did sound really good. It sounded great. It sounded exactly like what I expect one of your records to sound
like. Yeah, it's garagey punk rock, I guess. In terms of the gear, I used a Fender Bassman 100T.
I love Fender Bassman 100s. Now, you were at a studio at The Ranch in Southampton.
Yeah.
It's really good. There's a Fender Bassman 100 at Brighton Electric, which used to be mine, which I sold to them. And it is an absolutely fantastic amp with a matching 215 cab. Sounds great for guitar or bass. You can use it for either.
Well, it sounded great. And then we also recorded a DI at the same time. And then we ran that through some sort of plugin.
Right.
And that sounded probably a bit better. So what we did was mix in a little bit of the Bassman 100T, but mainly use the plugin.
I'm all up for that. I think bass plugins have sort of got good at a faster rate than guitars, or maybe basses are just more suited to.
It's just easier, isn't it? Just easier to make a bass.
I don't know
sound
if it's that. I think it's more that. If you're miking up a 15-inch cone, I think you get loads of sort of flubby excess. Like a 15-inch cone's delivering so much. If you're miking up a specific point on that,
you're just going to say something about flubby excess.
Flubby cone.
I'll tell you what. If I was staying there for a month and eating microwave meals and going to KFC, I'd definitely have some flubby excess.
End up with the flub.
So that was the bass. I mean, I think bass is just people just care less about bass, don't they? So yeah, plugins are fine. That'll do.
That's probably right. Yeah.
You know, it goes so low in the mix that no one can really hear it anyway.
Sure.
For guitars, we did spend a bit more time trying a few bits out, and we settled actually on two amps that we brought with us. The first being a Marshall JMP 50 Master Volume, 1973.
Was that the? That's the new one. That's Danny Grace's new one.
No, it's a vintage one.
Oh no, I know it's. I know it's a vintage one. But
Dan bought
that's the one Dan was talking about.
Yes, he bought it recently, but it is vintage. older than him.
We had a whole discussion about.
We did.
Why should you?
It's like mid-70s.
Yeah, I can't remember how old.
Mid-70s, 50 watt. The concern was that we would get it there and it wouldn't work because Dan hadn't actually. He'd plugged it in quietly at home, but hadn't. Cranked it and it sounded amazing. One of the best guitar amps I've ever heard. Unbelievable, in fact. Classic kind of Marshall, you know, a bit of mid-range, but mainly it's that kind of top, biting top.
And
box. It was great. And then on the other side, we used Dan's amp, 1974X combo, which was good. A little bit less open sounding, a little bit more direct sounding. And the two kind of filled the sonic gaps.
Ran them in tandem.
Well, kind of. It wasn't running them in tandem. It was two different guitar players.
I see.
And they were doing their own thing on each one. But we recorded the drums, bass, and all the guitars live. And then just went back and fixed any bits that were a bit rubbish. But pretty much, including the solos, everything on the record is live.
Cool.
Not the vocals. I would have liked to have done that.
Uh-huh.
Basically, I just like to get it done as quickly as possible so I can
go home.
Well, have a cup of tea. Home and or like over the course of two nights, we basically watched about four series of Peep Show. So that's what I prefer doing.
So Dan would have been using his Custom Shop Telecaster.
Custom Shop Tele, and then on the other side, a Les Paul Junior.
Oh, was it your Les Paul Junior?
Nope. No, Tim bought his own, which is just a faded 400 and something quid guitar.
Mate, that absolutely sound great, fine. Though.
Yeah, perfect. Sounded really good. We brought, so the full lineup of guitars that we brought with us was a the Custom Tele, the uh-huh. Les Paul Junior, a Strat with a humbucker, a 335, SG with P90s, and that's about it, I think. And then we ended up not using any of those. We just used the Tele and the Les Paul Junior.
Oh, that's cool.
Because that's what you need for punk rock. Why would you need more than that?
Sure. Good that you bought options. That sort of shows.
Well, we were thinking like, oh, we'd try a few different guitars and stuff, and then we just plug the Tele in, plug the Les Paul in. And it was like, this sounds absolutely perfect. Let's not mess around. Even for the solos, like I said, we recorded the solos live. So we were like, oh, we should do solos on different guitar. And then we listened back to it and we were like, this sounds mega. We don't actually need to... don't need to redo any of that. The only thing that we actually didn't, the only thing that we struggled on was the vocals, and that was because I was doing 5 hours of singing in a day. Starts to get to you.
Yeah.
I also heard that Matt, the drummer, was struggling because he got his leg tattooed and it got infected.
Yeah, that was...
And then he couldn't put any weight on it.
So the other thing about the drums, yes, that was a problem. It was fine. He could push the hi-hats down, which is fine, and he could drive us there and back, which is the drummer's most important job. But the funny thing was, so we set up the drum kit, spent ages like tuning it and, you know, the thing that takes the longest time when recording. And like, you know, tuning the tom to be like, oh yeah. So I think we actually like worked out if we play in standard tuning, the engineer was like, if you play in standard tuning, I'll tune the drums to that. So they were like, I don't know what you do with drums. You sort of like work out a rough pitch of the record and then you tune it so it like sounds nice with the tuning of the guitars and stuff. And he was tuning this tom for ages, probably about 20 minutes, half an hour or something. And then when we went back and listened to the recordings to like cut like the noise out, you know, when you like cut the noise either side of a drum hit, we worked out that across the 10 songs, and across the whatever it is, 25 minutes of music,
I know where this is going.
The tom, either of the toms, were only used 22 times. And some of that, in one song, there was three appearances of a kind of little tom roll. So with it, and the tom was hit like five times in each of those rolls. So that accounts for like 15 of the 22. And that's in one song. And then the rest, whatever that is,
great.
The seven.
How many do you say? 21 or 22?
22.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, seven.
I'm into a minimal drummer. I like drummers that don't use a lot.
Well, we just sort of told him just... Because like the more you do with drum fills and that, the more likely you'll mess up and then you just got to record it again, haven't you? So just like, if you just don't do them, easy.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
just, then you can record it quicker.
I imagine that is one way to look at the making of music. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm all about. I'm about... How quickly can you record stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Got 10 more songs. So we recorded 10.
Uh-huh.
Got 10 more written. I think we're going to go back in 3 months and do another 10.
Are you releasing these together or separately?
No, they'll be separate.
Right.
Two albums, isn't it? Another one?
Yeah.
Have you got the songs written already?
Well, we haven't rehearsed them. So 3 months would be a stretch. But within a year, we'll do another 10 songs.
Oh, that is amazing. Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm not looking forward to listening to it. But I will listen to it nonetheless. Great. Jay Cross, you bought some new gear this week.
I did. I bought a new amp. You know, living here in suburban Port Slade,
uh-huh.
here in this, you know, just on the outskirts of Brighton.
Don't tell them where you live.
In suburban Wiltshire.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's better.
Stonehenge
uh-huh.
is where I live. You know, just lots of houses. I've got a bit of privacy, but not too much. So I wanted something, you know, nice and small and convenient to play at home.
Of course, sensible.
So of course, I bought an 8x10 Ampeg bass cab, which only just fit in my car.
I can't believe it fit in a car.
I know. So a couple of weeks ago, Dan Grace, friend of the podcast, who we've talked about a lot already today, he sent me a link to a this Ampeg that was going a fairly reasonable price on Facebook Marketplace. And I thought there's just no way. I don't need this. I don't need, but it was a very good deal. It was the cheapest I've ever seen one.
Right.
It was a very good deal.
Yes, I've and seen
it,
how much.
It looked very cool because it's all beat up.
Right.
And it was located between my house and work.
Oh, it was meant to be.
So I sent the geezer a text and said, I was like, is this available? Can I come pick it up now on my way to work? And he lived in Brighton as well, so he had to get in his car and drive down. But yeah, got it, picked it up, and I've not plugged it in yet because I've no idea when I would be able to plug this in without it. You know, the people that live downstairs have got a young child and a dog, God. And I'm just
I hope they didn't see you coming in with it.
Well, yeah. So, but yeah, me and the geezer who I bought it from, he didn't think it was going to fit in the car, but I was like, no, it's fine. I've Googled. It fits in a Fiesta. It'll be okay. and even when we got down there, I was like, I don't think this. I brought some bungees just in case I needed to like bungee the boot shut. But yeah, got it back. I tell you what, owning that, it feels bloody good to own an Ampeg 8x10. Yeah. It feels really good. It's so impractical. I've no idea when I'm going to use it. Like I said to Dan that the band that we do is going to have to book a tour. Because that's the only way I can justify having it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Isn't your drummer like permanently not around?
Yeah,
he's touring with another band.
Yeah, and like me and Dan both are working all the time, and it's just it's gonna be difficult. But
I'm almost certain you will never use that cab.
I'm also almost certain I will never use it, and if I have to sell it, then I have to sell it.
Well, but, think about me when you do. It's actually, very. Don't. I own too many.
It's really exciting. It is like every time I walk past it, when I'm on my way out of the house, I'm like, this is great. Look at that. Look at the size of that thing. It's almost as tall as me. But yeah,
it's taller than me.
When I got it, I wanted to take some self indulgent photos of it. The only way, I asked my girlfriend to come and take a photo of me sitting on it, and the only way that she could get me and the amp in the photo was to literally lie on the floor and angle the phone up, and she couldn't even look at the phone while she was taking the picture. But yeah, it looks amazing. So fingers crossed it works, eh? That'll be good.
Fingers crossed. It's quite dog-eared.
Yes,
it's had some additional handles.
Did you not even test
it
when you went to pick it up?
It was in a lockup. It was in a lockup in Horsham. Like, there
wasn't much you can do.
No. So the geezer, we had a bunch of mutual friends on Facebook, and I said, look, if it doesn't work, I'm going to have to give you a shout. And he said, it works, but yeah, that's fine. No worries. So cool. He seemed like a trustworthy fella, so let's see what happens.
Oh, sweet. Well, yes. Welcome to... Well, actually, I've never owned an 8x10.
Have you not?
No. I think I've always owned smaller things. I like 15s, so I've always owned two 15s. Like two separate 15s.
Is that what you've got? That. What's your Ampeg?
I don't have an Ampeg.
No, sorry, your Ashdown.
Yeah, they're both.
Oh, I bet they hate when people make that mistake.
And I bet it happens all the time. Yeah, they're so the Ashdown do their custom shop, and they had. So I got them on a deal because they had two pre-made classic 410s, their chassis for their classic 410.
Yeah.
And so I just asked them if they could stick a 15 in each of the chassis instead of 410s in both, and then I'd take both. And they said, yeah, that's fine.
So you've got two 15-inch speakers mounted in cabs big enough to hold four 10-inch speakers.
Yes. So I've got two 15, but it's the...
Two single 15s.
Yeah, but it's the size it is of an 810, I guess. Together.
No,
yeah.
That would be big. That would be bigger.
They're probably bigger. Yeah, yeah. They're bigger.
Why do you need that?
My band asked me that often.
Yes.
Because I have started just bringing 115 to shows. Because to be honest, I really like the sound of 115.
Yeah.
I actually kind of prefer it. It's a bit more tameable.
That's my favorite bass amp comp speaker configuration.
What's that?
Single 15.
Really? Yeah. Just a single 15? And I mean, think about it. An Ampeg B15. That, you know, that is the studio recording bass amp.
Yeah.
Industry standard on more records than probably any other amplifier ever to be made.
Yeah.
It's also the amp model that I use on my Helix now.
Just a 115?
No, the a B15.
Oh, right. Okay, that's what you mean.
I turn my head into a B15.
I went to a show this week, this weekend, and it was like a kind of like hardcore metal show, I guess. And the backline was, and this is going to sound like, I'm going to sound like such a wang here, but the backline was
nothing different there.
Was 2 4x12s. And a 4x10 bass cab.
Right.
And it's been so long since I've been to a show where bands are using 4x12s and a, you know, like a proper bass cab.
Uh-huh. Wait, what do you mean? Why has it been so long?
Because people use combo, like at punk shows and stuff, people use combos.
Guitar combos?
Yeah.
Hot Rod Deluxes.
Hot Rod Deluxe or AC-15 or AC-30 or like a Marshall 212 or something like that.
Right.
You know, you very rarely see a single 412, let alone two 412s, let alone... And usually if you do, like at punk shows, at the sort of shows we go to anyway, if a band does have a 4x12, it's got an orange Tiny Terror on top of it.
Yeah.
You know. I
think they did the rounds in every genre, the Tiny Terrors. But I find I've always found really interesting, like the different backlines you see from genre to genre.
Well, this sounded amazing. And the band that I was there to see, my mate's band, I think one guitarist was using a 5150 and the other, I think, was using a dual rec.
Right.
And honestly, the amount of air that was moving in that room, it sounded so good. And like it felt so good.
Having lots of speakers is always, you know, fantastic when you're in small venues. Like I always found it because that is kind of, I don't suppose 412 so much anymore. Most people everyone in like math rock uses orange 212s.
Yeah.
And everyone's now switching to getting the vertical ones because everyone just used to put them on their side anyway. So it's always orange 212s. And then the bass cab is I guess there isn't really a sort of standard bass cab that you see around.
Because those orange 410s are really expensive,
yeah. So I guess you see old Ampeg 410s
really
a lot.
And they're really deep as well. Mm. That's the thing that
they
always...
They weigh a ton.
They were
a bit of a nightmare. But you see some. There's not really a standard, I guess, for bass players. But for guitars, everyone has orange 212s. There's a little variance in heads, but mostly, most people are using orange. And it's always 212s. And when Tim moved to playing... two Katana combos, it's caused problems because whoever's headlining, you just assume's going to have
backline
a couple of 212 cabs because every band that does this does. And all of a sudden he's like, we can't do backline anymore because it's just
nothing worse than combos. A headliner that doesn't bring cabs.
I know.
Yeah, well.
Do you let people use your...
Of course, yeah.
You let people use Katanas?
They're welcome to all of our gear. Yeah, that's, you know.
I guess your... thing, like everyone's using loads of pedal boards anyway, so
plug
it into the clean Katana and then...
Well, this is it. Tim goes in through the effects return now, doesn't he? He doesn't go in through the front of it.
What preamp pedal is he using?
He uses a Helix now.
Oh, God.
Did we not talk
about
this?
We have talked about this. I just forgot. I just blocked it
there
out.
There you go.
Nothing against the Helix, but...
Is that the Katana's Helix? Or is it one that you...
No,
bought?
it's his own one.
Oh,
I'm
you're using the Katana's one.
Using
right,
the Katana's Helix.
So just going back to the show that I was at, there was two 412s there, but I did kind of like stand there feeling a bit smug, thinking, you know what would make this sound better? If that was an 8x10, you know, because it's just a puny 4x10. So I felt pretty good about that.
In your sort of semi-defunct band, what are the heads that are being...
Semi-defunct.
Well, if the drummer's not available.
Yeah, I mean, we're grown-ups, we've got real jobs. Right. It's difficult.
Tunnel just like have the everyday off to work on Guitar Nerd stuff.
Yeah. Well, or work in a practice studio, whatever it is that Chris does.
I know the rest of his band have got proper jobs. He's the only one that's a slacker.
No, they don't.
Or,
the guitarist is a handyman.
Be a dad, like Tim.
Yeah, Tim's like a part-time handyman, part-time dad. And the
does he have to buy like left-handed hammers engineer. And stuff?
yeah, all of it.
left-handed screwdriver.
No, he just uses them upside down.
Right. Oh, okay, good. Yeah. What, he hangs upside down?
Yeah, that's how it works.
What heads that? Well, so Danny G, obviously playing, he's got...
Oh, because he's in both bands.
Now got a Marshall.
So he used the same setup for both bands?
He doesn't do gigs with them and he doesn't do gigs with us, so...
Right. Yes. we've done two shows, and for both shows he took his 1974X, I think, which sounded great. And the other guitar player has got a, take a guess.
Or a JCM 800.
Yes. I don't think it. What's Dan got? It's not a JCM 800, JMP. Is it? JMP. That's what Lee's got. Oh, they've right. basically got the same amp.
Yeah. Okay.
It's.
What are you using for bass? Or do you just borrow Mark's?
I've got Mark's Mark bass.
Mark bass, series one, yes. When they weighed a ton and actually sounded but good.
But now that I've got this 8x10, I have been thinking about maybe, can I justify buying a super bassman?
Oh, one of the 300 goodness.
Watt ones. To never play.
No. Just get the 100 watt. It will sound better for punk. It will drive at a lower volume. You'll
want
that.
I know.
They're also heavier and less reliable.
What are?
The 100s. Because the 100s are all valve.
Yeah.
And the 300s and all valve.
Yes, they are.
Are they?
Yeah.
You're right, thinking okay. There's a 500, which is
like Class D power amp or something.
Yes, with a valve preamp in it. Right, it's just
that's what I was thinking.
I really dislike this, like, valve preamp. It's like you've put a 12AX7 at the front of a digital amplifier. It's not part valve.
I bet it still sounds great, though.
They do sound great. They do sound really great.
I really love the 100 watt one.
The super basement's just, it's so expensive.
You don't need anything more than that 100 that I used the other day.
If you ever loud. But like, it looks well good.
If you ever want to use the Ashdown CTM 300 I have.
Grub.
I mean,
I'm kidding.
Aren't they in the same box? The 100 and the 300.
No, the 300 is in. It's
much deeper.
It's in an enormous box.
Oh, right, okay.
The 300 is like a big sort of Ampeg box, whereas the 100 looks like the old
Basement
100.
What's the size of the Ashdown?
You know how they're really narrow and deep. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. It's a two person lift.
Yeah.
I am into the idea of that.
Ten valves. How?
That's too much.
That's too many. This is why.
It's too much valves.
There's as many valves in that amp as Mark just recorded songs for his album.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem I have, because Ashdown have sort of loaned me that to like be seen using it. And I'm like, if I take this to a show or a tour, the chances of like 10 valves going over the course of a tour are surely so high. Like,
I don't think so. I think
that's probably Joe's just like fear. Loading it out after he's had 20 pints.
I suppose, no, yeah.
10 valves, 10 pints.
Yeah, true.
True. Two calls, two figures.
I have to take the ABM 600 with me if I take the CTM 300. And then
in case?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's like this, I could just not take the...
Yeah, just take the ABM.
Yeah, exactly. Oh well. Anyway, we should have a chat about before we go into the news, because there's a bit to talk about in the news. We should check out what's in our mailbag.
Mailbag.
So first up this week,
you don't give yourself much room to play with there, do you?
No, it's actually better if I don't, because I can cut sharper to sort of either side of the speech and move it, rather than having to just cut and then remove the dead airspace. It just doesn't make any sense for me to actually leave a real life gap. It's not like I pop it over the gap. I still have to. Anyway,
you could have just said yeah.
Yeah, I should have. Yeah. I should have.
I'm not. We pay you to take care of the technicalities, mate.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Mark, last week you went to see our friend Russ from Eastman Guitars.
I did.
I went to
collect new SB56, which is Eastman's, I guess, Les Paul or LP style guitar.
Good save there, that one.
Yeah, sure. Eastman's, I guess, solid body range consists of...
SB being the...
Yes, SB, solid bodies. Consists of, I guess, kind of Les Paul-y style guitars, although the shape is slightly different. Got a slightly more rounded off kind of horn, and the overall body shape is slightly different.
And they do a few models in that range, because they do an antique varnish,
yep.
A nitrocellulose, and now a vintage nitro as well.
Yes, and these are, I guess, in the SB58, are they called? Sorry, SB59.
What? What's an SB59?
That's the humbucker version,
which is just the standard nitro, and then the vintage nitro is the 56 and 57, which is a P90 and a humbucker, respectively. A gold top P90, which is what we've received, the 56, and the 57 is a black with gold humbuckers.
Yes,
very tasty.
You're right. Sorry. Yeah, I didn't quite realize that about the range. So yeah, the 56 is based on like a 56 gold top. It's a gold top with P90s. And I was very, very impressed. So price wise, they come in at £1,750, something like that. £1,750.
Yeah.
And for that, you are getting kind of Gibson custom shop type feel.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, which is important to note because at that price, they are level with the, oh no, I'm not going to be able to name the range, the Classic?
Something like that.
It's either the
Classic,
which is quite a similar looking instrument, but certainly quality wise up close, this Eastman is very different.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the things to point out are obviously, you know, it's nitro finish, and quite crucially, fingerboard ebony, and it, you know, it just felt great. I we've talked about it on the podcast before. I tried some Eastman when they were first available at GAC, and I wasn't blown away. I just didn't really get what people were kind of going on about. And I think it was just that I didn't really connect with the kind of big body jazz guitars that they do. And right. Having played them since, I'm still not a huge fan. But the Les Pauls and the kind of 335 style guitars are unbelievable for the money. These Les Pauls, absolutely fantastic. Obviously, they're $1,750, so they're not cheap. But for what you get, they are very, very affordable.
Yeah,
I thought this was amazing.
Yeah,
really, really, really fantastic.
Yeah,
it was. It really, because I mean, I borrowed it for just a few days, and it felt amazing. It sounded great. It looked quality. It was really took me by surprise. And again, like Mark, I wasn't a huge fan of the hollow body stuff, the 335s either. I didn't really get, but this I thought was just a cut above. Really, really fantastic.
It is fantastic. I love a Les Paul with P90s. I just like mahogany guitars with P90s. They always sound so great. There's a tiny bit of us demoing this guitar because it's what I played for all the little countdown snippets in our last YouTube video.
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought that sounded like a P90.
Oh, there you go.
Number two.
Yeah, I didn't say that. I did record those and then abandoned the idea that and just had quirky little...
I'm surprised.
We've had nothing but great feedback about those on the original YouTube videos.
That's the thing. Is people hate them so much. I'm really surprised you didn't keep them in.
I recorded new ones and I made them really elaborate. I did them like echoing. I double tracked my vocal, did one like an octave down, and these are gonna really annoy people.
That's the thing. You should just even just get the original ones. It's just Mark like trying to do a deep voice.
Number two.
I definitely couldn't do that today.
Anyway, this 56 were an absolute cracker.
Yeah, yeah, really good. And do you know what? I've got some friends who are kind of like after Gibson style guitars at the moment, and there's. I'm really trying to convince them on Eastman stuff.
I remember we spoke about this on the podcast, and they said, you know, it's got to have Gibson on the headstock.
That is always the thing, and it's always what Eastman are going to come up against.
But I just feel with Eastman, people just need to play them. You know, I'm in a position at the moment where I've got my ES-175, which I love.
Yeah.
But I am very aware that I could sell it and buy the Eastman version of a 175 and this.
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to be the thing. I mean, Eastman need to make guitars that are, you know, twice as good and half the price.
Of course. If you want to go up against one of the biggest guitar companies in the world, that is always
But I tell you what, I was really surprised when I was looking up info on that Eastman when I had it here. They're in a lot of shops now, in the UK at least. They're in a lot of big name shops.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, they're obviously doing something right.
Yeah.
Like I said, when I was doing a tour of some London shops, and we went to Ivor Morant's, which is the kind of jazz specialist.
Sorry,
the jazz specialist.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
And they were raving about Eastman, and they were saying that, you know, in terms of kind of semi-affordable arch tops, that's the place to look. That's what they're pointing all customers towards. So
they do. They do a deep-bodied, no cutaway. Sort of like a James Bay, but really deep with a P90 at the neck that I really like the look of in sort of an antique varnish. I could get that.
Oh, the one to look at is the T64, which is their Casino or 330.
Yeah. It's very good.
Analog and amazing. And the thing about the 335 style guitars is they're no money. They're like $1,099.
Yeah.
Which is so cheap compared to what else is available.
Yeah.
And they're really good. And they do like some vintage finishes, but they also do some like more kind of like flamey things if you want them as well. It's not really for me, but
I'm so into the black
and the cherry are really good.
I just like that hand rubbed, that vintage lacquery, that violin-y finish. Oh, yeah, I could Yeah, go for some of that.
The fact that you said hand rubbed and then went a bit weird made me just like feel very uncomfortable.
I liked it very much. Speaking of things that are a little bit weird, we also received a new pedal from Mad Professor, who what did we, the last thing we got from them was the Sweet Honey Drive, which was a very good drive pedal that I think me and Matt were a big fan of.
Yeah. I don't remember really what it sounded like. That was a few years ago,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was probably a couple of years ago. But yes, we have now just received the brand new Mad Professor Double Moon, which me and Jay were trying out earlier whilst Mark was complaining about his voice. And it's a fantastic sort of... it's a fantastic... I don't know why I'm picking it up. This is audio.
Oh, look at this. Oh, wait.
Can you hear? Yeah, it's a really good sort of multi-purpose modulation pedal. And I kind of hate using that phrase because, you know, whenever people do sort of like, here's all your modulation in one box, it's like, yeah. So it's like, if you do that, it means you're making a modulation pedal for people who don't like modulation, because it's for people who don't want to assign the pedal board real estate.
They don't want five modulation pedals, they want one.
Whereas someone like me who loves modulation is going to want to assign all of their space to it. But this is actually a selection of very, very high quality different types of modulation. But also I really like that they're actually only subtly different. It's about nuances.
Yeah, I mean, we went through and tried them all. So you've got in this, you've got three choruses, three...
dimension
we'll call
choruses.
double choruses for the sake of our mate who's not here to defend himself.
It's not dimension, is it? It's chorus ensemble.
They call it DC.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's and it's chorus. Very much if you okay, read fine. The write up, they've worded it very carefully.
Okay. It stands for double chorus, guys. Come on.
Double,
okay.
Fine.
Then you've got F1, which makes you sound like Lewis Hamilton. Then you've got F2, which I think is a flanger. Yeah. Then DF. Which is double flanger, FC, which is flanger and chorus, and then V, which is vibrato. And so Joe and I went through and tried them all, and I found it very, actually, not having the ear for modulation.
Yes.
Joe just about kept his eyes from rolling backwards into his head whilst looking at me there, which was very nice of him.
Thank you.
I found it quite difficult to distinguish between the first six sounds. I mean, there was obviously a difference in terms of kind of the how dark sounding they were and stuff. I mean, that's how I kind of, and I guess the speed also, but
well,
there
that
is
was,
the speed
that was
control.
Actually, like, a lot of it was the rate.
Yeah,
like you know, so there wasn't going to be a lot of it. It was essentially the chorus ones, the first three chorus ones, basically give you longer or shorter controls on the of the speed of the chorus. Sorry, we're just looking for the manual. So
yeah, well done for breaking the fourth wall there.
I know, I was trying to keep it.
You've lost the manual already, haven't you?
No, yeah, I was just trying to, because there was one in particular. I think it was the second of the main choruses was the one that I liked. And it was called something like classic and dreamy chorus sound. Oh, and the third one was... they call it a tasteful, smooth chorus. And I thought that sounded really good. They do say that it can produce a faux Leslie's tone at a faster setting.
I started doing that. And you guys weren't into that.
I didn't really like that.
No.
But I thought that just the standard chorus sound, I thought was really nice.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The DC, I thought, was, you know, okay. Flanger, I just don't really know what to do with it.
I really
liked it. The difference between the two flangers are you've got, in F1, you've got a short delay time, and in F2, you've got a longer delay time.
Which is great, because you can slow that right down and get those sort of, that like, tape manipulation sound, which is
yeah,
quite cool.
Yeah, I mean, you were saying that you thought that this stood up kind of to the Deco, which
well,
I think
it's
was really
a strong alternative.
I think the thing is, though, is the Deco is kind of... This is far more an effect, whereas the Deco, I think, traditionally has been used more as like a preamp.
It's a nuance pedal, yeah, the Deco is. But the reason that I drew similarity was the way... Because the thing is that the way that you're controlling the different types of effect, it's not like you're... It's not like a big switch where you're going, now I'm on the vibrato effects. It's kind of it's a rotary that's just got markers along it.
So yeah.
You're just scrolling through, and that's exactly how the Deco works as well, because the Deco, you know, you rotate the Deco around it. At one end, you've got like tight flange. Turn the control the whole way around, and you've got like a slapback delay sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's that sort of manipulation of how that, you know, one chip is creating the effect. But I thought this was a super cool pedal.
I thought it sounded great. It is not cheap, though.
Oh, how much is it? I wondered why you were making that face.
$249.
Yeah. Wow. So it's £50 more than a Deco.
Not according to Google Shopping right now.
Oh, no. How much is a Deco?
$270, $280.
Oh, really? Oh, crikey. Yeah. I thought they were cheaper than that.
They were when they first came out.
Oh, I see.
But, yeah, it's not fair to, you know, judge it up like that.
I think
that.
They're doing very different things.
They are doing very different things. And quite unlike you, Joe, this is exactly the sort of modulation pedal that I'm into, because very rarely am I going to need loads of different... You know, I don't need
of course
a ton of different things. So I thought it sounded good. Thought it sounded cool.
Yeah. It's a high-quality multi-modulation pedal. I think that's what probably is going to separate it from the rest of its
How many different effects can you have on at once with a Mobius? You can only have one on, can't you? You can't assign multiples.
Ooh, I don't know. I've not ever used one, right?
Really?
I've ever used a Mobius. No.
Well, that's why you'd get the bigger one.
The Mobius is the biggest one.
I think you can have more than one on. I'd need to check. I've never actually
plugged
one in.
I'm actually not sure that you can.
We'll do some research anyway.
I mean, everybody who's listening to this is yelling down the phone at us.
Yes, you can! Fools! Anyway, we also received my favourite thing that we received through the post this week.
Oh, someone sent you some beer?
No, it's not my favourite thing.
That is your favourite thing in the world.
No, I mean...
I think you can have two effects on at once with the...
Yeah, probably.
With the Mobius.
Probably. So, the other thing that we received is very important, because it's a solution to a problem that...
doesn't exist.
All guitarists.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I just thought
all
funny
guitarists are suffering from.
Oh, okay.
And that is plectrum storage.
Okay.
Where are we going with this?
Well, I'm talking, of course, about the Pickmate.
I think it's pronounced Pickmata.
It is Pickmata.
It's like the German drink.
Oh, that would be so much better. I wish they'd thought of that. Pickmata would be excellent. But no, we're talking about the Pickmate. This is they're like a made Mata in USA plectrum holder. It's like a little plectrum shaped handbag.
What's that word that comes after the word genuine there?
It says genuine leather.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. Not very...
you shouldn't even be touching that, Joe.
I
haven't bought it, have I? God. But no, it's a little plectrum holder, so it can hold up to 10 plectrums. It's plectrum-sized. And
what if you use 0.38 plectrums?
You can get more.
Really? Yeah. How many?
Yeah, 20% more.
Is that it? Because...
50% more.
What if you... Okay.
But I did realise something about this this plectrum holder. At first I was like, because the idea of this, I should explain to the listener, is it's got some straps on it. And the idea is that you can strap it to the back of your headstock so that your plectrums are in easy reach. Because, of course, the other plectrum holders that you put on a guitar, you'd normally like stick them on with sticky tape.
Sticky back plastic.
And that's going to damage your guitar. So these you just tie on. They've got like a little leather strap with a little buckle.
Oh, that's made of leather as well, is it, James?
I assume so. It looks like vegan. The flesh of a cow.
You can also, if you're feeling fruity, you know, put them around your bicep like the ultimate warrior.
Yeah, or around your head or neck. You can put them around your neck like a choker.
Let's not do that. The straps are actually quite tight, so we should not probably endorse that.
Yeah, we don't recommend that. But also, I noticed at first, I was like, but if you've got all your plectrums in here and they're on your headstock and you drop a plectrum, it's got like a button opening thing. So you're going to spend ages opening it, you know, probably longer than you would be fishing around in your pocket. So I was like, well, I don't know about this. But then I realized it's got a little slit cut into the lid where you can fit a little emergency plectrum for quick release.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god.
There you go. So anyway, yeah. I thought they were pretty cool. They were pretty fun. That, you know, I don't need to strap anything around my headstock, but you know, they come in a choice of colours.
Come at me when they're doing their mushroom leather.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't mushroom have a problem with leather.
It's something that I've read about. One of the like luxury, I think Lexus now make an optional extra for their leather. They're like top end luxury cars. You can get mushroom leather seats rather than real leather seats.
Fellow who came up with that must be a fun guy.
Cork.
Oh my gosh. Shut up.
we're going to stop recording now. That is it. Everything's over. Yeah, that was a good one. Anyway, on that note, we should dive headfirst into a big fat barrel of news. So, first up on the
news... Don't give yourself much time there in between the...
We've been through this. So, one of our favourite companies, Mataverse, are back with something new. Mark Packham, talk to me.
They are indeed. So, Mataverse have announced the Air Trash, which is a pedal, unsurprisingly. And they describe it as a pedal for guitar or bass that sounds like absolute garbage.
When I read that first line, because it was reading its day, I was like, oh, is this another April Fool's press release? But then I carried on.
It was released like a few days ago, so probably not an April 1st release. But they again describe breadboard explorations and integrated circuit abuse as being the inspiration behind this. I guess what they're saying is they've just mashed a ton of stuff together in one pedal to see what happens. I guess it's a fuzz, but it's also doing like weird kind of chip-tuney stuff. It does just make your guitar sound bad.
Oh,
and
I love it.
And ultimately, that's kind of what it looks like.
It's
they're
that sort
for.
Of bit crushy, loafer.
Totally.
I mean, kind of a similar thing, not the method, but the end result is relatively similar to the sort of things you can get with a fuzzrocious Knobjorn.
Yes, similar to that. So, on the pedal itself, there are three controls, none of which are labelled as anything, and there's no... it seems like there's no documentation about what they do. One thing I really did like about the description on the website is there's a paragraph that says, it works well with guitar or bass, but works well is in speech marks. The whole idea, and you know, it's classic kind of Mataverse stuff, is he's done something mad. It's up to you to kind of make of it what you will. It's not supposed to sound good. It's supposed to sound different. And it definitely achieves that aim.
He's just so funny. Someone who clearly doesn't take himself too seriously.
Yeah.
He knows what his audience are. The people that buy Mataverse pedals want pedals that sound bad. And so he's gone in. He's pushing people to the absolute limits here. But I tell you what, it looks amazing.
Well, I mean,
I think the design is quality.
His videos, again, you know, for me, it's the ultimate gear video. All the videos are a minute, always. They're always a minute. The pedal is on a little green screen, and then there's just mad videos in the background of like, he's got some stuff of like 60s dancers. Sometimes it's like the sea.
I bet he signed up for some like stock video that you can only get for free if it's 60 seconds or less.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely.
He's so good. So I had a brief chat with him at Summer Nam this year, and he was super biz, so we didn't hang around for too long, but he's...
Do you mean Wunnam? When you say SNAM, do you mean Wunnam?
No, I mean SummerNam. Oh. I don't think I saw him. No, I think it was just SummerNam.
Right.
Matt, he's so lovely, super lovely. And the pedals are just bonkers. I really like the droney stuff that they do, that he does, like the the just the output. You know, there's no input.
Right.
I think that, like, because it's, you know, it's just super mad synth Very stuff. Cool. He's the Mataverse stuff's wicked.
Yeah, super duper cool. What should we do next? Oh, yeah, Jay. That was weird. I'm sort of out of order of stuff because I'm thinking we've not
You're got out of order.
A lot of time left, so I thought I'd pick the best bits. Jay, talk to me about USB power.
I'm out of time, so I'll pick the best stuff. I know what our audience really likes when we waste time talking about power supplies.
So Songbird FX, a company that I hadn't heard of before, actually, have released some very cool accessories. Genuinely very cool. So what these are called are the Bird Cord Voltage Converters. And they do four models, a 6-volt, a 9-volt, a 12-volt, and an 18-volt. And on one end, they are just standard jack inputs for guitar, power inputs. And on the other side, they are USB. And they will convert the 5-volt output that you get from a USB to either a 6, 9, 12, or 18 to let you power a pedal.
Fantastic.
That you know, so if you've got an 18 volt pedal but you don't have your 18 volt power supply, never fear, unplug your iPhone, just plug the Bird Cord into your iPhone charger, plug that into the wall, Bob's sure. your uncle, Nob's your buncle, you're playing your 18 volt pedal.
In the example video, he was demonstrating it with a multi USB lithium power source.
Okay.
So he was saying, look, you can bring this little brick of sort of preloaded USB power along, and he was plugging in
Like something that you just buy off Amazon, not like the Volto or anything like that.
No, it was it was like an unbranded black USB power source that you charge on a wall and then plug your USB devices in to recharge them. And he was using that and plugging in a Roland Street Cube.
That's mad, isn't it?
A RC3. Yeah. And a wah pedal as well, because it could run off of all the it had enough outputs to do that. And so he was plugging, and he was going, look, this is a thing you can buy for $20 off of Amazon. This is now a complete busking rig.
Yeah,
which is great.
Totally. And you know, if you're going to busk all day, just charge up, like, just buy like four or five of those batteries, charge them up, job done.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, thing is people will dismiss this as something that's stupid, and they will think that I'm being an idiot just talking about a weird accessory here. But genuinely, this is fantastic.
It's great, yeah.
This is a really, really cool product. And 17 euro is the selling price on their website. So, I mean, I think this is quality. Really, really cool. And actually, they do some cool other stuff as well. We should get in touch with these guys. Let's do some
pedals,
cool
as well.
Looking stuff. Some pedals on there, a load of it. I mean, I was looking at the accessories. Sure, but, you know, you do it whatever floats your boat. I tell you what floats my boat: accessories.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, also very cool. Joyo, super excellent budget pedal company, who we've recently realised are not just like an average a budget pedal company. They actually make really fantastic stuff, and there's quite a lot of sort of thought and engineering and love for the community going on, you know, within Joyo themselves. Have just released the DSeed 2, which is their dual channel digital delay, and this is their timeline. This is their version of like a high budget all singing all dancing digital delay. So, you know, whilst it's called a digital delay, it's got it will do analog, it will do a tape effect, it does like a filtered delay and like a lo-fi. You've got your shimmer on there and a looper all built in, and a dual foot switch, which works well with the looper as well because it allows you to sort of play, stop, record and overdub separately. It's cracking. Stereo in and out, which is wicked. All the demos sound great. Like, it sounds fine. It sounds like all those other, you know, shimmery, expensive digital delays. And I was like, oh, this is cool. I think it's nice that Joyo have brought something to the table for this. This is fine. This is good. This is their timeline. Absolutely fine. No problem at all. It's $89.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It's $89.
It's even just looking at the picture, like, the build of it looks amazing. The way that they've laid it out. You know, they've come on leaps and bounds, Joyo, from being a very budget pedal company.
Yeah.
Looking at that now, if you looked at that pedal, you would think that's a £300-400 boutique. Yeah.
I mean, that looks like, it looks like a Meris.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. $89.
Can I tell you my favourite bit about this little article that we've got up here is one of the features is set tap tempo with 1 foot.
Well,
that's true because I actually prefer my pedals where I have to set it with 2 feet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
very
yeah.
used to having to jump up and down on a pedal. Yeah. yeah, but you know, there's not much more to say than that because, of course, it does all the things that you expect one of these pedals to do. But man, I mean, for $89, why wouldn't you get this? I really think this is an alarming.
I mean, that sounds too good to be true. Yeah. Like, I'd really like to hear this because that does sound. That sounds too good to be true.
It sounds great in the demos that I've heard. In the demos I've heard, they were a little light on showing us the shimmer, which is a feature. And of course, the shimmer's the one where it's the tracking on those octaving delays that's gonna like.
Is that the one? Is that the one that's listed as space?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I like that they've also got a one of the types of delay they've got on there is just called copy. Which I think is really funny.
It's ironic. Yeah.
but yeah, the reverse on there as well, which is really cool. Yeah. It's got everything you want. Everything you want that most companies charge you £250-300 to get. I think this is going to be really good. I'm really excited to hear it. I need to get one.
Can I just talk about something that you haven't put in the news rather than the thing that you have put in the news that you wanted me to talk about?
Why not?
Have we got time for one more thing?
We've got time. We've got time.
So this week, and I'm sure we haven't talked about this already because it happened this week, Fender announced a brand new signature model, bass, which I'm surprised we haven't talked about. I'm surprised that neither of you picked this up, being that you work for Fender and you love bass.
I did see.
Fender announced a brand new Duff McKagan signature model.
I did see. I didn't talk about it because essentially they've shoved a scratch plate on the old model.
No, that's not true. There's also block inlays, which were not on the previous one.
Has it still got the stupid plastic neck?
I think it will still have a painted neck, yes, because it's based on the
ESP.
Yeah, I see what you did there. Based. So it's based on the one that he took on the road for the Appetite for Destruction tour. He says, at some point we went to get another bass, but we couldn't find a jazz special, so we went to Fender. To flash forward, be a Fender artist, have my own signature bass with this company is incredible. Don't know why he says that, considering he's already had a signature model. But it's very much like his previous model. They've added a scratch plate. There's block inlays now, which I'm pretty sure there weren't before.
It didn't have block inlays before.
And it actually looks a lot better. That was my main problem with the previous one. Apart from the fact I'm not a huge fan of the kind of painted neck, is I don't like Fender basses without scratch plates.
No, I didn't like the pearl white that it came in.
This is also in that finish.
Yeah.
But the black scratch plate does kind of help disguise that in somewhat. Yes.
Yeah, I think now it looks like I could see this in the hands of some like modern metal bands now. Whereas I think before it was like, unless you were in a Guns N' Roses band.
I don't think even metal bands, I think anyone who's using a P bass could use this.
Sure.
The problem with the one before is, I think it was,
looks so 80s.
Yeah, it was well 80s, and it was like hard rock and metal, I think would be your things that you'd use it for. This looks cool. Anything with block inlays, you know, I'm up for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have we talked about how absolutely minted Duff McKagan is and how smart he is?
No.
So
we all met him once.
Did you? I've met him.
He was at the shop.
Yeah.
He came and did a signing.
Were you there at that point?
I didn't work, but I came.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You know, I lived on North Road at the time, and I was the disruption that it caused to the street with
Appetite
all the people lining up the road was irritating. but no, I didn't work there at the time. But anyway,
put it this way, Duff was very upset by the state of the staff toilets.
When did he leave? They were bad, weren't they?
Yeah.
When did he leave Guns N' Roses?
1997, I'm going to say.
Is it 97? Let's have a quick look at the lineup.
I reckon 98. I'm going 98.
Hello? not very good at this.
Man looks a computer on podcast.
lineup chat. Where's just show me the diagram. That's
there's
what
too many people okay, though, from Guns N' Roses. Yeah. That's the problem. There's too many.
No, no. That's exactly what you want. Guns N' Roses members. Here we go. Oh yeah, you're right. There's no diagram. Duff McKagan. What did you say?
97. I said 98. I said 98.
He left in 97.
Oh, yes.
Damn it.
So he left in 1997. And I think at the time was was it then replaced by Tommy Stinson? Tommy Stinson joined in 1998 and then was in the band until 2014. So Tommy Stinson has been in Guns N' Roses for longer than Duff McKagan ever has.
Right.
Which is quite funny. But, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, so Duff McKagan left in 1997. And in 1994, do you know what he did with his Appetite for Destruction money?
What?
He invested $100,000 in Microsoft, Amazon, and Starbucks.
Oh my goodness!
This was after he, I think it was after he left to do a business. He's like an MBA. He's like apparently really smart.
He
fella.
Plays in NBA.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, he's also very tall, which is really surprising. Yeah, he's really tall. But yeah, by all accounts, wicked geezer, really wicked geezer. Oh, so wonderful. Yeah, very interesting. But yeah, I guess, do we have time to talk about
these? We do have time. I only meant I was, you know, going to cut out a couple of the lesser good ones, but we haven't actually cut anything now, have
okay.
we?
Okay, no, not at all. So just sticking with Fender, a bunch of other stuff that announced this week. In fact, actually, as we talk, I don't think it's announced, but by the time this podcast comes out, it would have been announced.
Oh, wonderful.
So you two are getting a sneak peek. The next in the line of the alternate reality guitars came out this week.
We've seen these already.
We've seen these. As you had the Duff, actually, the Duff was shown at Winter NAMM.
Oh, was
it? Yeah, and he did like
just ignored it.
He did a Q&A as well, right. On the booth. It was really cool. But yeah, the 66, which is the scaled down jazz bass body on a Strat with an HSS. Really cool. I really like it.
Oh, it's a scaled down jazz bass body. I never did that.
Get with it, Grandma.
I never put two and two together with that. I understand now. I thought it was just copying Stingray.
No. It's actually it's fully just a jazz bass scaled down to the size of a Strat. I think they look great. The Daphne Blue one for me is just absolutely phenomenal. Really cool looking. And I also really like the natural one. It looks like that first jazz bass that I had, the vintage modified 70s jazz bass, you know, big headstock.
Yeah, they've gone for the big headstock, which definitely suits having that totally. Sort of extended lower bit that you get on the jazz bass body.
Yeah, totally. I think it looks absolutely great.
Very cool.
And then a couple of...
really unusual pickup configuration, though.
Well, the HSS.
Yeah, but with two sort of Telecaster-y, lipsticky...
Yeah, I guess... I can't remember what those neck pickups are, actually. I wonder if they are Tele neck pickups. I think they are, actually. I think you're right.
It's Player Series single coil Tele pickups.
Oh, those are really good, actually. The Player Series pickups are really good. They were such a jump over the old standard pickups.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anything would be over ceramic pickups. There's not enough vintage lacquer going on for me in all the new Fender stuff.
Yeah, I think it's...
it's a bit pale.
Well, I think... It's quite expensive, the vintage lacquer to do.
It's not very in vogue either.
No, it's not. I think that's the other side of it is what if people want a darker looking neck, they want a roasted neck.
That's true.
Rather than a vintage lacquer.
Yeah.
And I think that vintage lacquer is just often it's just a bit too thick for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So
I just remembered something. Talk about roasted. I remembered something else that I played at the weekend. Got the voice.
Yeah, fine, carry on.
I played one of the Novo guitars.
Oh yeah.
Which is the guy that started
Fano.
Has gone on to do his own another new company. Novo. There was one at the studio.
Oh really?
Neil's got one, does he?
Yes, in fact he traded a Fano for a Novo.
Tell you what, they're turning up everywhere at the moment these days.
Really good. The only
people
side
have been
is,
talking about them on the group as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like the only downside for me is obviously I'm quite a short man and the body is massive.
They are really?
They're huge, yeah. They're like they've got that kind of like Gibson L6S kind of feel to them.
Oh, right, okay.
They feel like they were a smaller guitar and then a giant sort of trod on them and squished them out sideways a bit. But
they're not thin, though. They're quite thick as well, aren't they?
Not super thick, I would say. But the thing that really impressed me was the neck. The neck was so good. And they're roasted maple.
Really?
And I'm slowly coming around to that being the best, for me, the best option for neck and fretboard.
Whoa, Mark Packham's changing his mind on something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, I would kind of prefer a kind of satin finish anyway. I know you hate that and you would like a kind of vintage lacquer, which is not for me at all. But the roasted necks just feel so good. And, we, you know, we've talked about it on the James Valentine stuff before and all the Ernie Ball stuff, actually. But, yeah, on this Novo, it felt incredible.
Yeah.
Didn't get to plug it in, unfortunately. And also, it was in a stupid tuning and I couldn't be bothered to tune it up. it was in, like, Dad Gad or one of those ones that you idiots use.
That was the most elaborate tuning you could think of on the fly, wasn't it?
It's ridiculous. But, okay. But it felt amazing. Really good.
Cool. Yeah, they are super cool guitars.
So just another couple of Fender series coming out. So some super limited, and sorry to our North American and South American listeners here. These are, I think they're EMEA exclusive.
What's EMEA?
Europe, Middle East and Africa, which is the part of Fender I work for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Take the first letter from each of those
I always things. Think that Europe starts with a U. I can't keep that one.
UMEA. UMEA. The Indigo Hybrid series, which is a Stratatelli, a Jazzmaster, and a jazz bass in a really lovely, like, deep indigo color. It looks, I think, fantastic. I'm just going to turn my computer so Joe can see it.
It's goddamn anemic maple necks again.
It is super anemic maple necks, and it's got pearlescent plate. Which I think they look amazing, and it's unusually for made in Japan stuff. It's a 9.5 inch radius, so as opposed to the 7.25 that a lot of the kind of traditional stuff comes through. Big U-shaped neck and American vintage pickups. So really cool looking, really cool sounding pickups. They look fantastic, and it's not huge money. They're about $1,000, and just something different from Japan, which is cool. The most exciting thing for me that's again, I don't think properly announced. So I did check. It's all right. I can talk about these though.
Great.
I checked with my boss beforehand. The Mahogany Blacktop. So the Blacktop series of guitars.
Fantastic.
Which came out.
They came around the first time.
They were really, really cool. The thing that I loved most about that, the Blacktop series, was with the Tele, the control plate was reversed.
Which is such a common mod anyway.
Super common mod. So you could just
explain what the Blacktop are to listeners in case they don't know.
They're Strats and Teles that have a black plate instead of a... And they were humbuckers.
Yes.
Yeah. And they were humbuckers. So, you know, I was just trying to make you feel uncomfortable there.
You were joshing with me.
I was. That was a really cool series. And basically they've been brought back with mahogany bodies. So only available Strats at the moment, but mahogany bodies with, so it's three models, like a cherry red with chrome pickups. Black with gold pickups and gold hardware, or Arctic white, I think, or no, not Arctic white, like a cream finish. I don't know exactly what it's called. With
sort of antique ivory,
I guess, something like that. I don't know exactly what it's called. It might be Olympic white. Can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. White-ish with three gold humbuckers. All of these have got black headstocks with gold logos. They sound amazing. They weigh like an absolute ton.
Wonderful.
That's proper solid mahogany. I tell you what, the troublemaker tellies that came out at the
which we raved about,
were fantastic guitars. Basically, if you wanted something like that but it was a Strat, that's what this is going to be. And again, they're super limited. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, like I said, I do apologize. Again, I think these are Europe exclusive, because they were designed by Well, partly me and a couple of the other people who work in the office. So very exciting to be involved in that. So yeah, check it out. I'll post something in the group when they drop, because I'm very excited that they are finally out, because they have been like 18 months in the making and I haven't been able to talk to anyone about them. So yeah, really excited about this.
Oh, awesome. Super cool. Well, that is it for us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We'll be continuing over on our Patreon, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free, and early $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode, the Hall of Fame, loads of other sort of early stuff, my occasional musings, and $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name read out in one fiery breath by me.
Okay.
But have you got a backing track? Yeah, I probably can't sing it.
I've got a backing track.
Do it.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
This is the Mattverse.
Air Trash.
You've got to do it in under a minute. Go.
Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Royce, Chris, Jake Cutmore, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Edge, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emery James Baker, Juan Correa, Aaron Sermon, Blake Wyland, Andrew Goody, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Losas, Ansams, Robin Smith, Derek Ritz, Chris Connors, Rob Nordrick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bradley, Steve Markle, DJ Marcross, Michael McBray, Carlos Manta, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Toms, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clem, Moo Garrett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Dyke, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Stuart Tate, Scott Tate, Sean Obo, Christopher Wilbur Chopperson!
It's the sound of my nightmares, and not even that Mattverse thing, just Joe talking.
Should have done this. This is good. No, not that one.
No. Well, you know, there's always next week.
Oh, this one's fantastic. What do you think that is?
It's the Miku, isn't it? Miku.
It is the double gate drone into the Miku. It's so good.
Wonderful. Anyway, that's it from us. We'll see you next week. Farewell.
Live long, dudes.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.